Hello and welcome to the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast, linking business with grassroots sport, with the aim of bringing about positive social change. My name's David Waldridge, and in this special episode, taken from one of our Elite Champion networking events, I spoke with Paralympian Will Bailey ahead of his silver medal win at Tokyo 2020. We discussed his challenging start in life, his successes in both London 2012 and Rio 2016, alongside receiving an MBE for contributions to table tennis and his Strictly Come Dancing appearance. Without further delay, this is Will Bailey, MBE, on the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast.
I was born with a condition called arthrogryphosis that is basically a severe arthritis that affects my hands and my feet. So I was born with that condition and had loads of operations at Great Ormond Street as a baby. But I was really like lucky that my parents, my stepdad and my mum sort of like brought me up to be really active and into sport. And I was never told I had a disability or anything like that. So I was kind of like always pushed into sport, and my brother was a good footballer and that sort of encouraged me. And I was naturally a competitor, so I just wanted to compete in everything. And then, yeah, so I was lucky in that way. And I think I got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 7. And after that, my grandma, to put a long story short, my grandma bought me a table tennis table, a mini one, so I could play sports still, even though I had a Hickman line in, which is, you know, a line where you get your drugs put into. So I couldn't do a contact sport, so table tennis was perfect for me at the time. And I fell in love with the sport. I really enjoyed it. And it was something I could beat my brother at, so I thought I'd carry on with this, you know.
Well, I was going to say, your grandma, a massive influence on your career, arguably started your table tennis journey. And I know family is really important to you, and I really do want to get into that. But with those battles that you were facing as you grew older and as you were more focused on table tennis, did you almost find that, and sport in general, as a tool to focus and motivate yourself to move forward?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think with everyone, you need that sort of like, for me, it gave me a purpose and it gave me a sense of like, when I was recovering, even though I was like down a little bit and felt a bit like sorry for myself sometimes, it made me feel great. You know, after I played a game of table tennis or after I've done some training, I felt good. And it was so important for my recovery, table tennis. So it kind of like, I wouldn't say it saved my life, but it kind of, when I was getting that treatment and everything, it gave me, you know, it made me really happy just playing. So it definitely helped me like psychologically, and it's helped me all the way through my life, really, just playing table tennis, something that I'm so lucky that I love, because I play 6 hours a day every day. So I'm lucky I love it, because some of the guys in my team probably don't love it. So they have to play so much, just like a job, but I'm lucky for me, it's something that I love, and yeah, I want to carry on for as long as possible.
When you talk about it, Will, you can see the energy almost radiating off you through what you're doing at the moment. But you mentioned family there, and you were achieving and doing some big things at a young age. I mean, at 12 years old, competing alongside able-bodied people. 17, you moved to Sheffield to the Institute of Sport. To be able to do that, you must have a really supportive family unit. Is that still the same now?
Yeah, I would say it was supportive, but it wasn't like they kind of let me do my thing. You know, they backed me and they believed in me, but they didn't ever push me or anything like that to play or to be good at anything. They just sort of like, my stepdad was super competitive. Like, so he basically gave me that will to win and that like, you know, sort of like desire to win whenever I played. But I wouldn't say they were like really like they took me to places. It was, I had to find my own way a lot of the time. So I like got buses to training and like found my own way. They worked so much. So they kind of like supported me in that way.
Yeah. You mentioned there that your family almost let you achieve and let you go out there and do that. Do you think that was, looking back at your childhood, the reason you had that determination is because of the battle you went through, that you had to do that battle yourself at the end of the day? You could have all the support in the world around you, and that was absolutely fantastic and amazing work was done, but you went through that battle on your own,
really, when you think about it. And
yeah,
you went that battle with table tennis as well. There's some parallels there, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think I am lucky because, like, I pretty much said it was probably tough love from my parents. They never did anything for me that they thought that I should be doing myself. And at the time, I felt a bit hard done by, you know, like not being able to sometimes, like, having to find my own way to training, like get the bus or something like that, or like walk in there, or I was always finding ways to train, and I kind of felt a little bit hard done by. But maybe they were doing that on purpose because they wanted to see how much I wanted it and how much I'd sacrifice. And I think there's loads of players that were getting like everything from their parents, going to every tournament, and they didn't have the hunger for it. So maybe it was good for me at the time.
And I think maybe it's a bit down to your confidence as well. I've seen you in interviews in the past saying that you kind of knew you were talented at this from quite an early start.
I just wanted to be good at something. And I wanted to be like the best. I wanted to push myself, and I wanted to surprise people with what I could do. So like, and yeah, I kind of think that was probably because of my disability that maybe when I went to an able-bodied club, I kind of felt like I had a point to prove, and maybe had a bit of a chip on my shoulder, like I could be anyone, even if I had a disability, and I wanted to show it, kind of thing. And I think that was the way I was brought up. I kind of was brought up to have a bit of a chip on my shoulder. My mum always said to me when I was playing football or something, don't use it as an excuse. You know, you can run, you can do what they, you can do what they do. So don't come off after me and saying, you know, you can't play as well because of your feet or something like that. So I learned a lot from sort of that.
A mental toughness that you were almost built with in your DNA. So, you know, let's wind forward, because let's talk about when you really first arrived on the international scene. Take me back to that moment when you got the call to say that you were heading to Beijing. That must have been incredible. Oh,
I mean, there's no words. I mean, I remember I actually got a wild card, and I was training at Bristol at the academy, table tennis academy there. And I didn't qualify for Beijing 2008. And because I was a young prospect, they applied for a wild card for me. And I remember I was in the street in Bristol, obviously miles away from home, hours away from home. And I just finished a training session and sweat dripping down me. And I kind of gave up on the hope of playing in Beijing 2008. And I got a phone call from the coach, head coach. And he said, you've got a wild card. And I remember throwing my phone up in the air and like, I've just caught it. And then, and I remember just crying, because all those memories of like, all those like struggles I just spoke about, they come flooding to the front of your mind, you know, and all those things you overcome in your life, they come flooding to the front of your mind when you sort of like reach a goal, which one of my goals was to compete at a game. So, I mean, it was just like emotion. It was just so emotional. I can't really put it into words.
So, of course, it was your first experience at a major Olympics. I mean, how did you use that first experience to put yourself even more forward to the Olympics that were to come in time? How did you use the experience of that first time in Beijing to motivate yourself?
Well, I kind of went into the Games with that attitude that I told you. Like, I believed I could beat everyone. And at the time, I wasn't as good as anyone, really. So I lost every game, but I had the attitude that I was the best still. I still wanted to win it. I still went there and everyone was going, Will, come on, you're going for experience. And I was like, no, I'm going to win. I went out there, you know, with that attitude, and I didn't really think about, like, I didn't think about the crowds. I didn't think about how much pressure I'd be under. And I learned a lot from that, because, I mean, I remember the first day that I played my match, I was playing next to a player from China. Obviously Beijing 2008, so the fans were screaming and I couldn't hear the ball on the table. So normally you can hear the ball hit the table, and the crowd was so loud I couldn't hear the ball hit the table. And I was like, I remember turning to my coach going, I can't hear the ball, like, it's just weird, I've never played like this before. And those sort of things, you know, you can't really prepare for. It's just surreal.
But that confidence you took into that first experience of, look, I'm going to go and beat everybody, it paid off because you soon started mounting up those accolades. Europeans, players, player, before even heading to London. But, you know, let's wind forward to London 2012, because you mentioned the fans there in China, but then it was your turn in 2012 to experience that, to play in front of a home crowd. It's an experience that a very few amount of people can experience. So take us through it.
Well, I can just tell you about my final. Like, I was sitting in the waiting area. So before you go out, you have to be in a holding area for half an hour. One of the girls who was sort of like a helper during the games came up to me and she was like, "Will, there's like 5,000 people in the arena at the moment and it's full. And there's like 5,000 people outside watching you on the big screen trying to come in." And I was like, "Really?" I was like, "Wow, that's unbelievable. That's crazy. Like, for table tennis." And I was like, "This is mad. We've got so much support." And yeah, it was just totally different, obviously, to what I've ever experienced before. And I think just feeling, I mean, just walking out there, I can see it now, just all the fans going absolutely crazy, singing Bates, singing your name, and just seeing my mum in the crowd and how emotional and how emotional she was and how much it meant to her. Yeah, it was a great, great day.
Let's wind forward to Rio. The pinnacle happened. The lifetime achievement happened for you. Having that gold around your neck once again, the weight was the same as the others, but it must have felt different this time.
Yeah, it did. It was special and something that I never really knew I could achieve. In the back of my mind, I know you sound confident and everything like that, but those doubts are always there. And I wouldn't say it's a confidence that I've got, because I think I have to train harder than anyone else. So it's almost like a reverse of that. I don't see myself as overconfident or arrogant. It's almost like it's a reverse of that. I feel like I have to train 10 times harder than everyone else to have a chance. So just to do it, I know I put everything in and I gave it everything I could. And I felt like really proud of myself that I've achieved it. But now I've forgotten about it. It doesn't mean anything to me. I moved on and I'm totally focused on Tokyo, because the past is the past. And it was a good achievement at the time, but I'm a different player now. I think I'm better than I was before, and I just want to do it again.
Is this the most pressure you've ever had going into a tournament? Because you are the top dog.
Well, I wouldn't say that. I still feel like I'm an underdog, and that's the way I train every day. I train like... I was speaking to Anthony Joshua about it, because he trains at EIS and some of the boxers, and they said you should always train like you're a middleweight or a lightweight, even if you're the heavyweight and you're the biggest puncher in the world. And I kind of thought, yeah, I need to train. I always think that I'm the underdog, always train like I'm the underdog, always go into competitions like, you know, like I've got a vulnerability. It's almost like I try and leave no stone unturned, and that's just what I'll go into Tokyo. I don't feel any extra pressure. It's more like an excitement, because there's players that probably think they're better than me, and fair play. I'm just going to go there and to show what I can do, and hopefully it'll be enough.
When you head to a final, your celebration of jumping on the table.
Yeah. Oh God. I mean, I've had some stick for it, to be honest, but I think when you know my story, like little things that I've had to go through, I mean, it was kind of like when I stood on the table and I opened my arms up in celebration, it was almost like, wow, like how have I done that? And I was looking at my mum at the time and I was like, look what we've done. Like, look where we've come from. I was, you know, I don't want people to get the violins out, but I was fighting for my life. I know what it's like to fight for my life and to be very near death, and like, to come from that to winning a Paralympic gold medal I don't know if it sounds arrogant, but I'm really happy for it. You know, I can't believe it sometimes. I'm like, I think it's cool achievement, especially if you actually been there and seen what I've been through. So it was almost like that was a relief, and it was like, wow, like look what we've done, mum, sort of thing.
In the madness that was probably going on around you of celebrations, you had a spotlight on you for your own moment with your mom. And that must have been such a special moment. Another special moment. Not only all the awards, not only all the medals, not only all the tournaments you won, 2017 MBE for services to table tennis. Is that is that almost a cap on your journey now? Because that's something that is outside of sport.
I mean, it sounds like everyone says this, but to be honest, it was a massive honour. It was a really surreal day. I mean, no one ever thinks they're going to achieve that. And I remember going with my brother and my dad and my stepdad and my mum and being in Buckingham Palace and walking around and like being like, wow, this is mad. Like, we're in Buckingham Palace. Like, what's going on? So, yeah, it was just a surreal, really surreal day. And spoke to Prince William and he said, my wife loves table tennis and you need to give her some lessons and stuff like that. I was like, yeah, definitely up for that. But it was a brilliant, brilliant day. Everyone will say this, but I'll never forget it. It was brilliant.
And after you retire, you can be a coach for Kate, Will, by the sounds of
things. I'm always up for that. Anytime.
So before we bring it back to today, one last look back. Something completely different, Strictly Come Dancing. I mean, how did it feel getting the phone call? How did it feel doing the dance? And of course, that brilliant routine you did in honour of Great Ormondstree as well.
I mean, when I got the phone call to say I was in, I was like, there was mixed feelings, to be honest with you. I was absolutely so happy to, you know, for a table tennis player to get on a show like that. I mean, it was, you know, I knew it was going to be great for my sport and I knew it was going to be good for me as well, for my profile and to get my name out there. But I mean, I was a little bit nervous because I've never danced before. And I remember calling my mum and saying that I got in and she was like, you can't do it. She was like, you're not doing it. You're not doing Strictly Come Dancing. Of all things, you're not doing it. You're not going to be able to do it. You're just going to be terrible. And all my brother and everyone in my family were saying you can't do it. And that made me probably more determined to do it. And yeah, it was cool. That dance that we did, the last dance that we did for Great Ormond Street was, I wouldn't want to, you know, I tore my cruciate ligament after that. So I wouldn't like to go out in that way. But for a last dance, I mean, that was probably the one that I would have chosen. So yeah, it was a cool week that doing that for Great Ormond Street and going to Great Ormond Street. And I actually went to my old ward and went into my old room where I was for my treatment for non-Hodgkin. So like that was weird, you know, to go to my old ward and to my old room and to sit with a girl who was in my room getting the same treatment that I had. I mean, it was a real emotional week, actually.
I bet. Yeah. Will, you mentioned there the ward that you were on, and that leads me really nicely to my next question. Seeing where you are now, as you're training for Tokyo, as you're about to go and get another goals, what would you say to your young self in that ward at Great Ormond Street? If you could have a conversation or just say one thing to the young Will Bailey, what would it be?
Yeah. Oh, that's tough. I mean, probably just like, it's not always just like things are going to get better. I mean, it's so hard to speak to someone like that. It's hard to explain being in that situation. I mean, when I went to Great Ormond Street, I did find it pretty difficult seeing those kids like that. But just like, it's going to get better. You're going to get through this and you're going to actually be a better person because of what you're going through now.
It was that spotlight moment again. It was that moment for you and that young girl that none of us will ever be able to fully understand apart from you and that young girl and you and your older self.
Yeah, it was a special moment. I mean, speaking to her and seeing her, you know, she made a Strictly like, you know, award for me and stuff like that, Strictly Amazing. Glitterball and everything like that. So it was so cool. And it was really inspiring. And it was like, just to see her, the fight that she had in her. And it reminded me of myself and what I had when I was her age. And it was really cool.
Well, Will, I think it's safe to say you are a complete inspiration. And I've got one more question before we do move on to our elite champions. And I'm going to open it up slightly. So Koi Sports, we look to invest in grassroots organisations, whatever that is. If it's a young person cheerleading, young person on a Sunday afternoon playing rugby, football, going to their local snooker club on a Tuesday evening after school. For that young person who really does have an interest in sport and wants to better themselves, what bit of a nuggets of advice would you give them?
First of all, it depends what sort of level you want to get to. But first of all, you have to you know, embrace the moment and enjoy it. I mean, everyone says enjoy it, and it's hard to when you're so competitive like me, but just try and be in the moment when you're playing sport and really lap it up and listen to the coaches, I think, and try your best. Like, I think attitude's way more important than talent. Like, if you have a good attitude and if you want to improve, you will. But you can have all the talent in the world, but if you have a bad attitude, then you've got absolutely zero chance and people will just fly ahead of you. So I think the attitude is the most important thing by miles.
Well, Will, we'll pass over to our elite champions. There is a bunch of questions for you. I'm going to head over to Vimal first, who you mentioned earlier about when you're in Beijing and it was you couldn't hear the ball tapping. Is that a usual standard rule that it needs to be silent, as we've seen at Wimbledon recently?
No, it isn't. So there's no rules that it needs to be silent. So it was just weird because, like, you can't make the crowd like calm down or be quiet. You can't just turn around and go shut up kind of thing. So it was pretty hard, actually. So it was just, you have to just cope with those things.
Will, you had an epic name drop of Anthony Joshua earlier on. Of course, you train at the Institute as well, where so many amazing athletes do as well alongside you. Take us through really quickly, obviously without giving all the secrets away, your training regime and maybe your pre-match routine as well. How does that look?
Well, it varies during the season. So now it's different. I mean, January I was working a lot of physical. I was still training sort of 6 hours a day. So table tennis training. And then we had like S&C sessions 3 times a week. Now it's more like 1 hour table tennis in the morning, 1 hour in the afternoon, and a gym session, sort of speed and agility session, because we're trying to like taper down and just feel good. But it changes throughout the season depending on like what part of the season is and when I need to peak. But I've done a lot of the hard work already. So now it's just about feeling good and feeling fresh and ready to go.
Yeah, so I imagine it's more of a training towards a championship, training towards a tournament, yeah, rather than, you know, just going through the motions in a way.
Exactly, yeah. I'm more training like tactically and like in match play and trying to be better in that way. Like a couple of months ago, I was working on my sort of fitness and working on my power and stuff like that in the gym. And so, yeah. It's just different for different times of the year.
So let's wind back to Rio. Get yourself back in that mindset once again. At what stage during that final, when you were playing the game there, did you have a little voice in your head at one point going, I've got this?
Yeah, I did, to be honest. I mean, only at about 7-3, I remember him missing a smash at 2-1, 7-3. I can't lie. You know, I kind of thought, I've got this, you know, I need to focus. But I thought, he's on the ropes and I need to get his, you know, finish him off when I can. So that was a time where I kind of thought, you know, finish him off. It was 2-1, 7-3 around there. And yeah, I managed to do the job. I don't think he got another point, to be honest. So I was like, I knew you can't really let him back in. It's like any sport. It's like boxing. If you see the hurt, you need to go for the jugular as quickly as possible.
Well, head over to Craig with his question saying, thanks, Will. I've got a son who had a traumatic start to life. So your story provides some really big inspiration for him. Correct. Do you feel that your success has raised the profile of table tennis in the UK? And if so, to what level?
Yeah, I think it has slightly. I don't think it has that much, to be honest, but I mean, it's done it a bit, but I mean, it's difficult because table tennis in this country isn't, you know, the biggest sport. I think in China, obviously, it's absolutely huge. I mean, we've got a lot of work to do to get to that level. And I think we need like Olympic champions and stuff to win. So like in the Olympics and stuff, we need people that are going to actually win titles, and that will make it bigger for sure. But I think, like, I mean, I go to China all the time training, and like they have like their league matches in the street. They put up like big screens and they have like table tennis league matches like we have football. So yeah, it's a different world, really.
And how is that for you, seeing that how big it is in one country and then not as prevalent here as it is there, for you as the poster boy for table tennis here in the UK?
It's a little bit frustrating sometimes because I don't think people really have When you say you're a table tennis player, sometimes I think to myself in the back of my head, like they sort of don't really know what it takes to be a table tennis player and probably don't think it's that hard. Like sometimes they go, oh, you train every day for that. And it's like, well, yeah, I'll do it. But so they don't really understand. And I think unless you like live with a table tennis player and actually train with a table tennis player, you probably don't, no one would really know what it's like. Probably like, it's like that with loads of sports, I think though.
Mike with a good question as we're talking about this kind of how the sport is bigger in China. As a gold medalist, are you well known over there? Are you somewhat of a celebrity? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm a celebrity. I'd say like the fans are really like, when you go to China, they're really like respectful of table tennis players. So if you've done quite well in tournaments before and you beat the Chinese, for example, they do actually love you. You know, it's like you've achieved something amazing. So yeah, they love table tennis players. So if they ever see a table tennis player competing at the games, they'll be running up to you and asking for your autograph and stuff like that and pictures. And it's nothing like here probably, but no, it's good.
Michael asking, interesting to find out how much of Will's drive is motivated by wanting the result and how much is it by enjoying the actual journey itself?
That's a good question.
That is a good question.
I think it's hard to... I've started to enjoy the journey more as I'm getting older, to be honest. But to be perfectly honest, it's not really about enjoying the journey for me. It's about the end result. And it's about it's about proving people wrong as well, which is probably not the best way to look at it. But to me, you know, I always want to prove people wrong and I always want to do things. I mean, all my life, people have said that have written me off in certain stages of my life. Like even when I was growing up, I wasn't supposed to be walking, stuff like that. And I wanted to prove them wrong. And now people say you can't win another gold medal and I want to prove them wrong. So every time I go into training, I'm thinking about those people that sort of wrote me off. And I guess that's probably not the best mindset, but it's just the way that I work. And I think it just drives me on to train harder.
And that's it for this special episode of the Koi Sports CIC Grassroots Podcast. Thanks to Will Bailey for taking the time to speak with us and sharing some of his inspiring stories. If you'd like to learn more about what Koi Sports is getting up to on a local, regional and international level, check out some of our projects online at koisports.co.uk, where you can also get involved yourself. Thanks for listening and don't forget to download and subscribe so that you never miss any of our future episodes. I've been David Waldridge and we'll hear more from the business and grassroots sports communities next time.